5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Model Moon!
The dark side of the Huddle Moon. Immutably amazing crypto wisdom. On the November 2019 episode of Crypto Currently, we talk crypto news from Lebanon, crypto crime in South Africa, China raiding crypto projects, Grayscale's drop gold campaign, and crypto mining news from Canaan and Bitmain, plus a few surprises. You are listening in the current year on the dark side of the Huddle Moon.
Copy. This show is proudly sponsored by Salamantech's point of sale devices and software. Tired of all the headaches dealing with cryptocurrency? You don't know what a private key is? You don't want to deal with exchanges? Well, if you're a business and you just want to run your business without thinking about cryptocurrency headaches, look no further than Salamantechs. We provide point-of-sale software that allows you to get paid in fiat currency, that's euros, allowing your customers to pay in cryptocurrency, that's BTC, ETH, and a host of others.
Stand by.
Dark Side of the Huddle Moon proudly uses the audio services of Eye the Sound. Beyond the amazing sound production, they've really been a sounding board, pun intended, for our show, giving us great customer support and constructive criticism and feedback. So if you want a little bit more personalized attention you're not going to get from a bigger provider, check out iThesound.com.
Huddle Moon!
All right, and we're back with another Dark Side of the Huddle Moon. I'm Blockade here with Josh. Josh, how was your Halloween? Did you do anything fun?
Well, I'm British, Cade, so the Brits don't really care about Halloween. It's just Americans. And oddly enough, Koreans start to do it. So there's lots of people on Instagram dressing up as various things. Our main celebration is November the 5th. So,
yeah, well, American culture is worldwide. It's spreading all over like a virus. Did you see anything scary on Halloween? Any scary Koreans dress up?
Not really. I think that it's a good opportunity for women to get, you know, they love dressing up and getting a bit slutty, I think.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you want to know what the scariest thing I saw on Halloween was?
No, go on.
I saw, well, it's the same as pretty much every day. I saw like zombie-like hordes of no-coiners just, you know, walking towards the fiat apocalypse. So it's the same as every day, just zombie-like hordes of no-coiners having no clue what's going on. So it's pretty scary, but I'm used to it.
Well, I saw that too. I have to agree with you there. That's, I saw a lot of those zombies, the no-coiner zombies.
Yeah, whether it's the U.S. or Seoul, you see the same ones worldwide, baby. Except for us. Except for if you're listening to Dark Side of the Huddle Moon, baby.
All right. Yeah, that's right. So today we're going to do another episode of Crypto Currently. It's now November here in South Korea. It's still Halloween, October 31st for you in the United States, for a couple more hours at least. You know, it's an international show, so we've got a bigger audience every single week, and hopefully you'll notice that our podcast is improving week by week. We've been making some small changes, so I hope that the listenership enjoys that.
Yeah, I hope the sound is better. I'll try not to scream too much. I'm being fueled by candy and beer right now, but let's get into the show, Josh.
All right, let's get into it. So which story do you want to cover first?
Well, I think we got it. I want to talk about the there's some big mining news. So one big thing is that Bitmain, one of the biggest ASIC miner producers, Jihan Wu is back in charge. He's also a big Bitcoin Cash guy, but it seems like there's a little drama going on there. And also, not only is he back in charge, but I believe Bitmain is going to open the largest mining farm in the world in Texas. So those are kind of big stories with Bitmain and also Bitcoin mining. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Actually, I saw these guys at the Korea Blockchain Week, so which was quite a surprise for me, honestly. I've never really seen them on the circuit promoting themselves. So maybe they are going to make a new push into different markets.
Yeah, and I was actually a little surprised that the biggest mining farm is going to be in Texas. I don't know what the deal is with electricity prices there, co-location, but I thought that was pretty interesting. And also, they're going to have a pretty big competitor. I think it's called Canaan. They filed a $400 million IPO in the U.S., and they're going to be a big competitor to Bitmain, it looks like. So I think that's good if you're into crypto mining. It's going to maybe drive the hardware prices down and be good if you're into mining. So I think that's pretty interesting.
All right, that is really interesting, actually. So it seems like at least mining cryptocurrency is a go in the United States. They've put in official requests to the SEC, even as far back as June, but they haven't got any reply yet. But things seem to be shaping up quite nicely. Apparently, this month in November in South Korea, we're going to see some positive legislation in terms of cryptocurrency and blockchain from the government, because actually, technically, in South Korea, it is a gray area. It's neither legal nor illegal. Now, it's technically illegal to have an ICO in South Korea, but the way that the Koreans get around that is by doing the token issuance in a different jurisdiction, normally Hong Kong or Singapore. But trading cryptocurrency is completely fine, and crypto itself is not a taxable asset. That's been made clear. But in November, we're going to see even further, let's say, clarity from the Korean government. So I think now that the Chinese government, at the end of last week, basically did a pro Bitcoin bit, the Xi Jinping coming out and saying, let's adopt blockchain technology. That saw a massive pump in the price of 30%, which was quite interesting. I think it is shaping up nicely for a huge 2020. I think if we've got the legislation in place by the end of this year, and then the halving in the first half of 2020, I think there's no stopping the Bitcoin bulls in 2020.
Yeah, I think that's, some people are all gloom and doom, but I think overall the halving, there's always going to be more halvenings. But yeah, if you're not efficient, you're going to get priced out of the market. A little interesting too, because a lot of them switch back and forth between Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, and also Bitcoin SV. I know that Bitcoin Cash is 3 weeks ahead of Bitcoin, so we might see some fluctuations there. I think some people are worried about a 51% attack on the Bitcoin Cash chain, but I find that highly unlikely. But I think the mining stuff is pretty interesting. But should we get into something a little bit more exciting?
I don't know. There's a lot of miners that find it riveting, I'm sure. But yeah, let's move on to the next story.
All right. So let's talk about China. So we always think that China might, we've heard rumors about China possibly creating their own like crypto fiat Chinese currency. In my opinion, that's not really a currency, but this is kind of new, is that the President Xi is pushing blockchain, and they've actually ranked 35 projects. And at the top, we see EOS, Tron, Ethereum. We see a bunch of different projects, NEO, a lot of actually Chinese projects, yeah. But we also see like things like Monero and Zcash, Bitcoin Cash, Cardano, Litecoin. So
it's quite interesting. I really think it's hilarious, honestly.
Yeah, well, the thing is like, I always think China's going to crack down on it. It seems like they're vacillating back and forth. All of a sudden they're super pro crypto and then they want to ban everything. So I don't really know what to make of it, and I have no idea what the leadership is trying to do, because some of these things wouldn't be good if you're a totalitarian regime. You don't want to like promote Monero and Zcash and these untraceable currencies. So I don't know if that's like a ploy or what
also
to make
Tron,
of it.
Being up number two, that must be a troll. You know, I think they're confused. Honestly, the government probably has had its ear whispered into by lots of Chinese projects. And probably EOS being at number one, because there's $1.5 billion trapped in EOS, then they want a piece of that. I think it's kind of hilarious that Tron is number two and EOS is number one, honestly. EOS can't do 200 transactions per second. It doesn't make any sense that it is number one. I'd love to see more information about it. Like, I was actually shared a meme the other day about this exact thing, and we were all having an inside joke about it. Tron itself, though, I mean, I still can't take Tron seriously just because of the leadership. Like, Justin Sun seems just like a comedy act, to be honest. Poloniex were recently bought out by Justin Sun's crew. So Poloniex is going to probably turn into a shit show, in my opinion. And I don't know why people think Tron is great. I need to see some actual evidence that it makes any sense. But as far as I'm concerned, it's just pure marketing. Pretty sad that it's managed to capture so much attention, but it's probably because of the Chinese investors. Now, on the last conference that I went to, which was probably 2 weeks ago now, it was in Seoul. It was at the Grand Hilton Hotel. And it was the first conference I'd been to in a while that had the very distinctly Chinese feel. Because normally they have a Western / Korean feel, but this one was a Korean / Chinese feel. There were lots of projects there that were blatantly just Chinese projects. And there was one there called Tree Lion, which was hilarious in the sense that they decided to give their ticker the TRN, and they were blatantly ripping off Tron and trying to, like, I don't know, like align themselves to appear to be like Tron. It was very clear to me that that's what they were doing, because the Chinese, they can't really, like the majority of them can't read English very well. They can't understand English very well. And I just don't like that part of the industry. Honestly, this kind of, we're going to pretend to look like this because some people might not notice. And that is absolutely rife in China. And that's exactly why the Chinese government banned cryptocurrency back in the past. Do you think, though, that this was a response from Xi Jinping to do basically the opposite of what the SEC and the hearing from LibraCoin? Like last week we had Mark Zuckerberg testifying, was it to Congress? I can't remember who he was testifying to. He had Maxine Walters grilling him. I'm sure Maxine knows a lot about cryptocurrency, not. But the reaction in the markets was swift, dropped 10%. And then almost the day afterwards, Xi Jinping was like, China backs blockchain. And then the market pumps 30%.
Yeah. What dropped 10%?
Bitcoin dropped 10% on the news. So as I was watching the SEC hearings with Mark Zuckerberg live, Bitcoin price dropped from, I think it was 850 to like 750. So this is, 8.5K to 7.5K. It dropped 10% very quickly. And then almost the day afterwards, it pumped back up to nearly 10K. So, and that was on the news of the Chinese. I still think, ultimately, when China figures out what most of these cryptocurrencies are, that they're not going to like them, like you mentioned. So this ranking is pretty funny.
Yeah, well, I read in a different article that some Chinese officials were like saying Libra's never going to work and they're going to beat them to the market with their own cryptocurrency. But I think it's going to be a crypto fiat thing. It's not going to be, it's really just going to be basically their currency they currently have on the blockchain. And it will still be inflatable and they'll still be able to inflate it and deflate it and, you know, do all that stuff. So I'm really not.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see a collaboration with Alipay or WeChat Pay with the government basically saying, thanks very much, we'll take a bit of that. Because yeah, it already has ubiquitous spread across the entire mainland of China. And it's spreading abroad too. So new point of sale devices that are getting sold around the world are actually integrating Alipay and WeChat Pay just because of the sheer amount of Chinese tourists that are going around the world now. So if you went to Thailand or Malaysia, you'll see in the 7-Eleven, like the convenience stores, you'll see that you can pay with WeChat Pay and Alipay already right now. So I think you're just going to see more integration of those digital payments and then a Chinese kind of coup of their own companies saying, thanks very much, we'll take a bit of that.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're already tracking all Chinese nationals' payments. I think blockchain will make it more secure and harder for people to do things secretly. What I'd really like to talk about, you kind of briefly mentioned, is let's talk a little bit about the price action. So for a few days, October 23rd to 25th, it kind of hovered around 7,500. And then just over a day from in the US, October 25th in the morning, it went from 7,500 to I think just a hair over 10,000 in a day. So $2,500 in a day. And then it kind of dropped back down again to 9,000. So a lot of people are speculating about why that happened. Do you think this is just like normal volatility, or do you think there's maybe a reason to it?
Yeah, like I mentioned, I think it dropped because of the market sentiment turned negative when the hearings of Libra coin were going, because people are looking for what the government is going to do, the American government, in terms of cryptocurrency, and Libra is quite a clear indicator for that. So once it turned negative, that sentiment translated into negative sentiment in the market, which lasted for pretty much the entire next day until the Chinese government announced, well, we're big fans of blockchain now, because they always go in cycles, really. They ban it one quarter, and then they say it's fantastic the next quarter. So we'll have to see what actually transpires in the future. But now that China have basically said, with Xi Jinping, no other than Xi Jinping himself, saying we're going to back blockchain. Now, he didn't say that he's a fan of Bitcoin, though. He was like very clear that this is not a pro cryptocurrency push. It's a pro blockchain push that they want the Chinese government to embrace. Nonetheless, that caused the pump, that caused the spike. And it was quite a healthy pump. I mean, it was a good, it broke the 10K barrier briefly.
Yeah, so, well, it's funny too that they didn't put Bitcoin on the list, but they did put Bitcoin Cash and Litecoin and ones that have very similar protocols on there. So I thought that was a little interesting. But let's talk about what's happening in Lebanon with the banking system. So we've been talking a lot in the channel about issues with Venezuela, with Iran, with all these other channels, with all these other countries, I mean. And Nassim Nicholas Taleb, I'm a big fan. I've read one of his books. I'm trying to read the others.
Which one did you read?
God, what did I read? What was it? Skin in the Game or something like that?
Oh, that's a good one. And maybe you've read The Black Swan as well. That's a famous one.
Yeah, so I gotta read
that in high school. Yeah. In a sauna. I used to go to the sauna and read it in there, and he destroyed the book, all the clues.
Yeah, yes, yeah. It's called Skin in the Game. He's written Fooled by Randomness, Anti-Fragile, Black Swan. I also follow him on Twitter. He has some interesting takes on things. But he blasted recently the failure of the blanks during the recent protests in Lebanon. And it says it offers the most potent case for cryptocurrencies. I would maybe disagree with him there and say maybe Venezuela, some other banana republics offer a better case. But basically, he says banks are never there when you need them, and they are trying to bully the public so they avoid accountability and profit disbursements. Banks are legal crooks. And I think this tweet kind of blew up, and he's basically saying that, you know, with poor economic management by politicians and bailouts and pegging the Lebanese pound to the US dollar, which is a crazy decision, these are really making people not trust the banks. They're losing their purchasing power. And it's just another example in a long list of examples of why cryptocurrency, in my opinion, really is the future.
Well, this is what happens. It's when the government says, look, we need more of the things that you've created, please, population that we control. So they're doing a tax intifada, which is essentially, well, it's quite a provocative word even to use that intifada anyway, but because of the political connotations. But it's basically the government saying that, look, we need to get more revenue into our coffers. So we're going to increase tax suddenly on products that you need and just to get by. So including petrol, which is, you know, you call it gas in America, I guess, and tobacco and alcohol, and even using messaging applications like WhatsApp is going to be taxed. I don't know exactly how they're going to tax that. Maybe they're going to tax the cell phone providers. I don't know. And it's going to be passed on to consumers. But this is probably not the most potent case, I would say, but I think it's the fact that he is a Lebanese American, so it's touched a nerve for him. And he's been bullish for quite some time on Bitcoin, and he likes the anti-fragile nature of it, because if you look at his book Anti-Fragile, the theme throughout many of his books is that basically you need to be able to have some type of hedge against the market crashing, and he thinks that Bitcoin is a great hedge for that.
I totally agree, and we've talked a little bit about gold and crypto on the channel, and Grayscale, they're presenting the Drop Gold campaign, and they launched their second commercial. I watched it. It's pretty humorous, and it's basically a guy in a suit laboring in some gold mine, and he brings some gold to this public board meeting. And they're all looking at him like he's an old geezer who has no clue, and they're like, why did you bring that here? We're in Bitcoin, or something like that. So I thought it was pretty humorous, and I always laugh about the Bitcoin and gold wars because, as you know, I'm kind of into both. I think gold is obviously more stable. It's going to hold its value. And crypto is more volatile, but it has a better chance of getting, I guess, bigger gains. So I'm a big fan of both, but I always laugh when I see like Peter Schiff, you know, and Dr. Doom trashing crypto, and then now the crypto people are fighting back and they're trashing gold, which I think is pretty silly as well, but it kind of makes me laugh. And actually, it reminds me of the Roger Ver Dr. Doom debate, which I watched and thought Dr. Doom did horrible. Like, he had no arguments. He basically just insulted Roger the whole time and didn't really have any clue about what crypto was. But it always kind of makes me laugh. But I think in the future, people sooner or later adopt both and just get over it. But we always see this factionalism between gold and crypto, or just factionalism between different cryptocurrencies too.
Yeah, well, let's share that link in the show notes below, because I just had a quick look at the video and it looks pretty funny. It's only a short 1 minute advertisement, or as Brits say, advertisement. But anyway, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And Brits also say, could I trouble you for a glass of water? Instead of water, they say water with no T.
Do we? Water.
Water. Water. Anyways.
It depends what part of Britain you're from, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, there are like more than, there are more than 30 distinct accents in the United Kingdom. There's a dude on YouTube who does a great video where he goes through all of them and he nails it. I'll post that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, why not? All right, let's talk about the Trump administration work to pop the 2017 Bitcoin bubble. I think this is a little bit, I guess, clickbaity, but basically, when this happened, they kind of put some financial instruments in place to allow people to short it. So I don't know if it was really an intentional, like, we got to stop crypto kind of thing. But basically, this is the ex-CFTC chair says that they popped the 2017 Bitcoin bubble. So maybe some people think that's good. Some people think that's bad. Maybe now some people hate Trump. But basically what they're saying is they allowed people to short it in the futures market. And that's kind of what stopped this parabolic rise. And maybe without that, it wouldn't have dropped like we saw it drop in the market.
I don't know about this one, to be honest. I think that people were calling for the ability to do shorting and to be able to actually have Bitcoin futures. So just because it didn't pan out the way that they wanted, I think it's pretty daft to blame the Trump administration for that. Because let's be honest, I doubt that Donald Trump understands what blockchain technology is, to be fair to Mr. Trump.
Yeah.
He's probably getting advice about what to say, but I really seriously doubt he understands the technology very deeply.
Yeah, but I think we're talking about like the U.S. government in general as well. I think the timing is kind of interesting, though, because these Bitcoin futures were announced on December 1st, 2017 and went live December 18th. And Bitcoin price peaked just one day earlier before falling dramatically in subsequent weeks. So there is a little bit of timing that coincides, but maybe
it went back a little bit. What? Can you remember? Let's cast our minds back to a previous guest we've had. Can you remember when we spoke with Matthew of the Practical Education Institute, the CEO of that one? And he said, look, I sold precisely in December 2017 because of the legislation that the government passed. And he said that many people in the know did as well. Maybe we could find that clip and just play it in this part.
To be determined.
And then we'll figure out if he's right or not. Let's see if we can edit that in or not, because I think that would be good as a refresher.
And also, there was like a lot of mania. I listened to the author of Confessions of a Crypto Millionaire, and he also said that his financial advisor told him to sell because, listen, I'm getting 80-year-old dentist asking me, I want to invest in Bitcoin, and they had no idea what it was. So there was a little bit of that mania, that FOMOing into it, that maybe is another reason for why it can't go parabolic forever.
Yeah, I mean, there are only so many people that can get into Bitcoin at this moment in time, because there are not many fiat rails on. But back at the end of 2017, there it was apparent to me, it was a lot easier for people to get their fiat onto exchanges and to be able to actually buy Bitcoin. Now it seems to be much more difficult. There are fewer legit exchanges, and it's harder than it was in the past, especially in South Korea. It's quite difficult. You just need to do your KYC, AML, but also you need a specific bank account to go on a specific exchange, because each exchange has partnered with a specific bank. So you can't just rock up with your current bank account and join a new exchange. You have to go to the bank, register with the bank, get a new account, say why you want a new account, and then register with the exchange. So it's actually not as easy as it was. And I think that is also a hurdle.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know exactly. I'm still dollar cost averaging in myself, but yeah, I think you know, in the midterm outlook, I'm pretty bullish myself. So,
I know what a DCAing is, but what is dollar cost averaging for the audience, Kay? Maybe you could share.
Dollar cost averaging is the every hodler is bread and butter. I guess not every hodler. Some people hodl in the beginning, just keep hodling. But dollar cost averaging means you just keep putting money in every specific amount of time. Maybe you put money in every paycheck, every 2 weeks, every month. So usually it's every week or every 2 weeks or every month. And you just keep putting money in because long term you're bullish. You don't care if it goes up or down. So you might not make as much as a sophisticated trader, but also in many ways, I think you're minimizing your risk, because long term, if you think it's going to go up, sometimes you're avoiding the peaks and valleys, sometimes you're hitting the peaks and valleys, but overall it's going to average out and work in your favor. And it's something you can do if you're not really big into chart reading and staring at the computer 8 hours a day. I think it's a good thing. Sometimes if it's really low, I'll wait. If it's been really spiking, I might adjust my dollar cost averaging a little bit. If it shot up $2,500 that day, I'm not going to buy that day if I plan to. But in general, you just keep putting your money in no matter what.
All right. So you pick a number and you just say, right, every X period of time, I'm going to deposit Y amount of dollars and I'm going to buy whatever that amount of dollars gets me in your chosen cryptocurrency. So what are the cryptocurrencies that you prefer? Is it Bitcoin, Ethereum, or your Bitcoin Cash, or something else? Which ones are you picking?
Yeah, I think right now I'm sticking with bigger projects. So I kind of rotate, or sometimes I'll get a little bit of each, but I have Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, EOS, Cardano. I think those are four of my biggest holdings. I've got a speculative basket of a few others, but I think those are four of my primary ones, and I've got a few others that I've got decent moon bags in, but those are the big ones. I just believe in big projects. You know, I think there's less volatility, there's less risk, but I also, you know, think it's smart to spread out a little bit. I know some people are Bitcoin maximalists, or, you know, BSV maximalist, or Ethereum only, but I think it's good to be spread out a little bit. I would say, not financial advice, but I would say 4 to 10 is probably good.
Cool. That's good.
And how about you, Josh? Are you back in the market, or are you on the sidelines waiting for another dip?
For me personally, I have a secret plan that I can't reveal on air, but I'll tell you off air exactly what my plan is. Maybe we'll have to do a show about this, actually. It's all revolves around the Tulip Fund, but I'll say no more.
Okay. Yeah, I know there was a big tulip bulb bull market way back in the day in the Netherlands. Maybe this is related, but probably not.
Yeah, it's not related to that. I mean, it has an interesting name that does relate to this, you know, the tulip mania, where I think it was in Amsterdam where they really love the tulips. They went mental and they started like swapping houses for tulips. But yeah, it's not related to that, but it does bear the same name. So if you want to do some research, you can check it out, the Tulip Fund, and maybe you can draw your own conclusions there. But we'll get into that on another episode, probably in January of 2020.
Yeah, nice. All right. Well, there's at least one more big story I want to talk about today. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we get into our favorite super cryptocurrency basket, Libra?
Well, there are a couple more links that I don't think that we have gone over that we thought we would discuss. So there's the 3D company one. There's the Johannesburg City infrastructure one. There is...
Let's talk about the
central bank digital currencies could start circulating within 5 years. So there's three stories that I think we should cover.
All right. Well, let's talk about the Cody Wilson one. So if you don't know, Cody Wilson is a Bitcoin pioneer. I think that's how he made some of his money. But he's been battling the government for a while, because if you're in the U.S., you can still own guns. And he released open source software on how to 3D print basically your own guns, and you're basically printing like 80-90% of the gun. All you got to do is put a barrel in it. So basically anyone can make a gun like in their garage with a 3D printer. So he's been battling the government forever, but politically he's kind of in line with what a lot of the early Bitcoiners. So you know, like we know, Bitcoin grew out of that, you know, cyberpunk open source, you know, anarchy, and like that became like kind of crypto anarchy. And he was doing this, and he took on the Obama administration, and he basically won. But now he's battling a handful of maybe a dozen states or so to be allowed to release these over the internet. And basically in the US it's kind of a free speech argument. It's basically right. Saying like, you know, you can say whatever you want in the U.S. You can insult people. You can say controversial things. You can say even bigoted things, and no one can really touch you. So I think that's a strong benefit of living in the U.S. But I think it's a pretty interesting story. I don't know how much he hasn't really talked much about crypto recently, so I think he's mostly focusing on this, but I thought it was a pretty interesting story we could touch on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how he's a pioneer. Maybe he's an early investor or something like that, and he used Bitcoin in order to receive funds when he was first doing his earlier versions of Ghost Runner, which is a machine that allows you to print 80% of a gun, like Cade mentioned. I wouldn't personally advise anybody to take the route that he's chosen, which is to try and face the government head on. I think you're just in for a world of hurt, and you better just to avoid it. I would recommend a book by Harry Brown called How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World, which basically advocates just going on your own way and staying out of the government's purview and not trying to take them on, because they will find some way to get you. So I was listening to Absolute Mad Lads on Count Dacula's channel the other day, and he did one on Al Capone. Now, Al Capone, famous mobster in the 20s, which basically is now the archetype of what a gangster looks like in all the movies still, with the smart suits, the top hat, and the Tommy guns. That was the Al Capone guys. And he ran Chicago for like more than a decade. He controlled the police. He controlled the politicians. And they tried to convict him, like the non-bent cops, the people that were not able to be bribed or were not under his cosh or whatever. They could never get him. But eventually they found a way to get him, and that was through tax evasion. And then the trial itself was kind of a show trial, because he wasn't really allowed to, he wasn't even allowed to plead guilty. Because if you plead guilty for tax evasion, I think the maximum sentence was like, 18 months or 3 years, something like that. But the judge didn't allow him to plead guilty. He refused to accept his guilty plea. And that meant that the judge could then pass down his own sentence. And then that's how they got Al Capone. So if the government wants to get you, they will find some way to get you. I think if you look at Roger Ver, he has a similar view when it comes to the government. Now, obviously, he's not a gangster or anything like that. I don't want to say that Roger Ver's a gangster. What I'm saying is that he believes that he was put in jail by the government unfairly. And if you look into his case, when he was selling pest control on the internet, that had some, it had some fire, I think fire gunpowder in there or something like that, in order to exterminate the, I don't know if it was locusts or whatever it was.
I think some, it was like rodents or something. Yeah, I'm familiar with this story. Yeah, basically, yeah, he was selling something that you could also buy on like eBay and like Walmart and like all these other things. And yeah, they selectively prosecuted him. Pretty crazy. We've seen that with other people in the U.S. too. We've seen that with Edward Snowden and Julian Assange. Some people have different views, but you know, in the U.S., as long as it's if you have that free speech argument, you shouldn't be prosecuted for disclosing information.
Well, do you remember Kim.com? He was he's a New Zealand citizen, because I think there is an investment citizenship route in New Zealand, so he pursued that. He used to run megaupload.com, which was a massive site maybe at the turn of the last decade. I think like 10 years ago now, Mega Upload was massive. I think, I'm not sure exactly when it was, but the US government basically requested the New Zealand Special Forces to go and raid his mansion. You can see the videos online, but it completely broke all of the laws in New Zealand. But the New Zealand Special Forces complied with America's request. Now, he wasn't extradited to the United States, and he's still fighting that case in one way, shape, or another, even if it's just in a media battle. But it shows how strong the U.S. government is. So, for this guy, going back to Cody Wilson, don't do what Cody Wilson is doing, fellas. Just avoid this type of, like, in-your-face confrontation with the government. It doesn't,
I don't know. I think he's a legend.
Well, he's a legend, but it doesn't end well most of the time. So,
well, you know, he's doing okay so far, but I would say this guy meets your definition of what you'd call a mad lad.
Absolute mad lad. Yeah, I would agree there. All right, so that's about it for that case. Quite an interesting one to talk about. Now, what is the next one that we're going to talk about? I think there's something in Johannesburg. So this is ransomware, another ransomware attack, where some hackers have basically taken over some infrastructure, some computers of individuals and businesses and government centers, and said, look, we need a payment of Bitcoin, but they've only requested 4 Bitcoin. So maybe these guys are just, it's amateur hour at the ransomware in South Africa. I'm not sure what exactly is going on there, but they demand 4 Bitcoin.
Well, I think they're requesting a modest amount because I think maybe they're trying to price in the action like a poker player. You know, if you ask for too much, maybe you don't get it. But if you only ask for 4, maybe you get called and they'll give it to you.
Oh, I was listening to Malcolm Gladwell's recent book, which is called Talking to Strangers. It's a great book. I'd recommend it. And there is a chapter about negotiating with people, with kidnappers, essentially. So listen to that chapter. I think they should have listened to it before they requested 4 Bitcoin. All right, let's move on to the next story, which is central bank digital currencies could start circulating within 5 years, study suggests. So the tech giant IBM have conducted a survey, which is basically saying that we think that the next payment frontier is going to be the integration of central banks with digital payments. Now, I personally think this is going to happen for sure. It's more of the legacy banking system having to adjust to market conditions. And I think that the ones that adjust the best, the quickest, the most effectively for consumers, enabling more people to be quote-unquote banked, like allowing people just through their mobiles and their fingerprint to be able to access banking services, even if it's not cryptocurrency, I think is only a good thing, honestly. I think that lots of banks are going that way. You've got Revolut and N26 and TransferWise and a host of others, including Salamantex's partner, which is 1031, which is a German bank, WEG, which is an old German bank. But 1031 is so named because of the Bitcoin white paper was published on October 31st. So this bank has been created as a digital wing of an existing old bank. And it's basically showing that in the future, old banks are going to start thinking more about the digital payment space. So it's quite an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah. I don't really have a strong opinion on it. I think it's just going to be the same fiat currency on the blockchain. I think if any country was savvy enough or smart enough or willing to give up that control, if any sovereign government created a capped, uninflatable national cryptocurrency, I think that could be a game changer. But governments governments are never going to give up that control. So for me, I don't really care one way or another that much, because I think like things like Bitcoin and Zcash, Monero, Bitcoin Cash, Dash, Litecoin, I think those are the future. I really don't care about crypto fiat, Frankenstein. Well,
the government cannot create a hard capped limited currency. It's impossible. It would destroy their whole way of doing business. I mean, it would not work. It would kill all of the social systems, Social Security, Medicaid, all of that stuff would be completely wrecked, because the way that they actually make these things is built on debt based on future tax revenues that are projections. And the idea that they would have a hard capped currency akin to like a digital gold, but it's backed by a government, it's just not going to happen. The reason that they got off the gold standard was so that they could basically, inflate when they needed to print their way out of problems. Now, too much printing is bad, obviously, but they need that ability to be able to create cash when they have to, in order to keep the economy going, which is why Bitcoin will inevitably keep on growing against the US dollar, because the US dollar is always going to be printed more and more each year. Same with the euro, same with the pound, same with all the other fiat currencies. Any state-backed or central bank-backed fiat-issued coin will always be inflationary, and that will mean that anything that is
stable that doesn't have any increase in supply, like Bitcoin, for example. Unlike Ethereum, though, Ethereum is inflationary. Bitcoin will always be deflationary against US dollars. So it's almost impossible to imagine a future where in 3 or 4 years that the Bitcoin price could be lower than it is today just because of the amount of printing that continues to go on in fiat money. So if you're comparing US dollars to Bitcoin, then Bitcoin is always going to be stable relative to dollars. So you're going to see a dollar amount increase in the value per Bitcoin inevitably. Yeah.
And that's also important too, is like even if Bitcoin goes up in value compared to the dollar, you got to look at the dollar's purchasing power. You know, the Bitcoin could go up in value, but it could allow you to buy the same amount of stuff as 10 years from now if the US currency really inflates a lot.
Yeah, that's a good way. Like, and that also shows how Bitcoin's purchasing power is increasing opposite to how, you know, the dollar's purchasing power is decreasing. So the purchasing power of the dollar from the last 100 years has basically lost, I think it's 97% of its purchasing power. You could buy a loaf of bread for like pennies and now it costs a couple of dollars. But whereas if you look at some of the interesting memes that came out around 2016, where it was like, all right, what could you get in 2010 with Bitcoin? Maybe you could get a cart full of groceries. What could you get in 2012 with Bitcoin? Well, maybe you could get, I don't know, a really stacked cart of groceries. What could you get in 2014? Maybe some luxury clothing, like Versace, Gucci, whatever. And then inevitably you had the picture of the Lambo in 2020. That's what you can get with one Bitcoin. So I remember those memes. I think that that helped get that into the out into the ether, or whatever you want to call it, into people's mind share in 2016-17. And I think it's actually still a really good illustration of how it's, you know, it retains its value, or even it gains in value, because you can actually purchase more for the same thing over time.
Yeah, and you mentioned as we're recording this that it's actually, where I am, it's the 11-year anniversary of the Bitcoin white paper. And I kind of think that maybe he chose to do it on Halloween. I kind of think he's American, so I think maybe it was kind of, he chose like, oh, let's put it on Halloween, you know, this kind of spooky idea, Bitcoin, this peer-to-peer decentralized cash.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I think Bitcoin was a group of people. And many of them were Americans, including Hal Finney, who's now passed. So I think, yes, you're right. It could be a significant date. It could be kind of a bit of a troll. Who knows? It was 11 years ago that the Bitcoin white paper was published. And then in January of next year, it would be 11 years since the Bitcoin blockchain Genesis block was launched. So we are in just the very early stages of what will be a never-ending saga, essentially. Once this genie's been taken out of the lamp, then it's not going to go back in. So it's like Pandora's box that's been opened here. And then we're going to see more of a public discourse, especially now that politicians are putting their foot in their mouth inadvertently by talking about blockchain technology, because it's going to start sparking people's attention. And once people start to really investigate it, they'll realize that the mathematics, the cryptographic security of it, that is completely sound. There's no way around that. It is secure. The network is secure. The more people that join the network, the more secure it gets. The harder it is to commit fraudulent activity, the harder it is to have a 51% attack to take over the network. The more decentralized it is, the more secure it is, the more nodes that run, the more secure it is. So once people start to grasp all of the different technical aspects of blockchain technology, it's undisputable that it is a valuable technology. I think that in the early stages, people didn't understand it, just like my understanding of it back in 2011 was very shallow. I thought it was PayPal cash, but kind of for dodgy people or something like that, because I just needed to transfer money onto a poker site. That's how we first discovered it, but not really looking into it much further until like 2015. That's when the penny dropped for me and thought, wow, this is the first peer-to-peer truly censorship-resistant form of value transfer that we've ever had. And it's got so many interesting properties, similar to gold, but it's much more transferable and transportable. So I like it. Let's go on to the next story then. I think it's the last one for the day, which is going to be the biggest one, I guess. It's the Libra and other crypto stories. So yeah. Is it the Cointelegraph story that you've got up?
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about that and just kind of like the background knowledge we have on the project. So we want to do a little update. We actually did a full show on Libra. You guys might want to check that out. It's in our back catalog. But basically, there have been some updates. I think we kind of maybe predicted some of these things.
Yeah, that was our first show, Cade, back in, we recorded end of June and it was published, I think, 2nd of July. So let's listen back and think if we got the predictions right or wrong. I think that we were fairly accurate. My take on it was that overall, this is great for Bitcoin. In the long term, in the short term, it's going to be good for, if it can get passed, it's going to be good for the developing world. In the long term, it's going to be terrible for the developed world. And I think that that's why the government is very against such a thing, because it's going to basically open up normal banking services to the rest of the world, which means that the labor markets of the whole world will be competing against the developed world, which can only be a bad thing, honestly, for if you just look at it logically, it can't help.
Yeah.
And if you're a nativist kind of protectionist country, which many countries have turned into, I mean, European Union's a protectionist trade bloc. America has turned more into a protectionist country. China's long been a protectionist country. So I think that it was inevitable that the Libra coin was going to face some sense of resistance.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think you also said it was kind of going to be a gateway into crypto and into Bitcoin. So the things I want to mention are that a bunch of projects or a bunch of, I guess, partners have already dropped out. Like a lot of the big ones, Visa, MasterCard, eBay, PayPal, I think Stripe as well. So we've seen a lot of the partners exit the system.
Do you think they did it of their own accord, or do you think that they were gently nudged by the US government? What do you think?
I think they did it of their own accord because they were maybe nudged by the US government or other regulators.
Of their own accord then.
Yeah.
I think if the US government was like, great, this is a wonderful idea, do you think Visa and MasterCard and PayPal are going to be like, yeah, we're not going to get involved in this?
Yeah, I would say, yeah, they were maybe politely asked, maybe not so politely asked. But I don't think they were, it's hard to say.
They were sent letters from congressmen requesting that they cease and desist this behavior. So it was explicit from the U.S. government. They were like, don't do this. We don't want to get our hands dirty. We will get our hands dirty, though.
Yeah, basically. But at this point, the U.S. government hasn't completely banned it. France and Germany have already completely banned it, and it hasn't even, came into existence yet. But also,
I said no. The French would always say no, and they did.
Yeah. And but I'll give you one example from the U.S. Lael Brainard, he's one of the governors of the United States Federal Reserve. He stated unequivocally that Libra cannot see the light of day until a number of regulatory standards have been met. So they either got to toe the line or they're never going to see the light of the day in the U.S. too. I don't know what those standards are, but I think they're going to be pretty stringent if I would make a guess.
Yeah, I would agree that they're going to be stringent. They can't really create a new currency and not comply with all the existing financial regulations. Like I mentioned before, the financial regulation rulebook actually has over 1 million paragraphs in it. Not 1 million words, 1 million paragraphs of legislation. There's a great article from CapEx, which is a great website if you're interested in capitalism, that talks about how regulated our markets really are. So the idea that we live in this Wild West capitalist like mayhem that a lot of people on the left side of the persuasion like to portray is just completely false. We live in a very, very well-organized, heavily regulated financial system. So the idea that they were going to let a cryptocurrency come in from a big company like Facebook that's got reach of over 1.8 billion people, I think it is, or 1.4 billion people, and say, yeah, it's going to be fine, is just ridiculous, especially when, if you get down into the brass tacks, it's going to be difficult to tax, which is the biggest concern. Second thing is, Facebook can move anywhere that it wants. Like, it's currently based in Ireland when it's trading in the European Union, and that they've got notoriously low tax rates. But they could move. They could say, "All right, our cryptocurrency foundation is set up in wherever is good." And I think that they're based in Switzerland, which has very pro cryptocurrency regulation. So they're never going to allow this to really get off the ground in the United States. And I think actually for good reason, because it would be a threat to the US dollar. And if you're going to be a responsible politician, I think that that's about the only thing that you can do, is to try and protect the economy through any means that you can, even if it means that you're not being a free market capitalist or a libertarian, all things go type of person. If you're going to be representing your country, then the most important thing is to not steal from the population via hyperinflation, as we see in Venezuela. It's to try and preserve the integrity of the money that you use, which is the US dollar in the United States. Even if it is flawed, even if the US dollar is flawed, we know it's fiat money, we know they print a lot of it, the US government has kind of a fiduciary responsibility to the United States public to make sure that that is as sound as it can be. So I could see this coming a mile off. Like to re-listen to our show and maybe take some clips out, and some have come true, but perhaps some of them have not come true. But let's see in another 6 months.
Yeah. Well, I don't think this is going to happen, but my dream would be that the US government would say, Libra, go for it, and try and take over the world with the Libra, take on the Frenchies and the Krauts, and just go YOLO. I really doubt that's going to happen, but I would love to. I would change my opinion of Mark Zuckerberg, who's zucking everybody off Facebook and building a giant wall around his Hawaiian compound. But we'll see what happens. But I think it's either going to come out in a limited, very watered down state, very controlled state. And in a lot of places, you won't even get to see it compete because it won't be allowed to.
Yeah, and honestly, I think that this is big news in the crypto media. It obviously makes a splash in the mainstream media, but it's not like dominating the headlines. And, you know, Facebook, they experiment all of the time. I mean, their motto is break things. Their motto is done is better than perfect. I mean, this is all throughout the Facebook campus. I'm currently listening to a great book. It's called Chaos Monkeys, and I'm about 12 hours through 15 hours, so I'm nearly finished. And the guy that wrote the book, he joined Facebook after starting he had a startup, and Facebook basically bought out his company, and he went to move to Facebook. Actually, Twitter bought his company, but he moved on to Facebook. And a lot of the inside stories that he shares in that book are really interesting. It's a really well-written book. It's right up my alley. I'd recommend it strongly. But it also gives you the impression about what it's like at Facebook. It's quite it's almost a cult. People completely bought into the idea of spreading Facebook all around the world. That's why they bought internet.org. So they want to make sure that every human on earth uses Facebook. And they saw an obstacle to that, which was that many countries have got bad internet. So they decided to make internet.org so that every person on the world could have the internet, so that then everyone could have Facebook. So that's how focused they are. But also at the same time, they mentioned, he mentions in this book, The Chaos Monkeys, that I just talked about, that they try all sorts. Like, they've had so many internal product suggestions that nearly get launched and then ultimately fail, or ones that get launched and fail and they just reiterate. They're not bothered about trying something out and it failing. So I think for Mark Zuckerberg, this is just one of those things. It's more of a grand scale, so to speak, you know, trying to create a cryptocurrency that could really have massive reach all around the world is obviously massive. But if it doesn't work out, I think he'll move on. And like you mentioned, I think he'll be consoled by his walled mansion in Hawaii.
Yeah, and actually, you mentioned Twitter. I wasn't going to talk about it today, but Jack Dorsey recently invested in Coinless Trade, which is a token sale platform. So he's getting into the crypto market as well. So I think that's pretty interesting. We'll see how that goes.
Well, he's been in the crypto market for a while. I think he owns Square. Twitter owns Square, I think. And I believe that Square is in the crypto space. Yeah, Square was co-founded by Jack Dorsey. And Square is essentially a cryptocurrency company. What are they doing? Financial services aggregator with mobile. And they do e-commerce. They do point-of-sale devices. They also do terminals. But also they have a very interesting... they've got a strong interest in cryptocurrency. So it makes sense that Jack Dorsey is talking about this.
Yeah, he's talked about Bitcoin before. I thought Square was just fiat currency, but they'll probably be looking into transitioning into maybe accepting crypto payments as well.
Yeah, I think, it ties in with what the earlier story was about the, the traditional banks getting more into digital payments, because that's the way the world is going. I mean, in Korea... right now, we're already living in a digital payment society. We don't have cash. I don't use cash. I can't really remember the last time I used cash. I think it's actually it's difficult for me to get cash. It's kind of annoying. I remember there's some street food merchants that sell that's basically a bread or whatever, and you have to pay with cash there. But other than that, you can basically use your card for everything. So we're already living in a cashless society in South Korea. And I think Sweden is also pretty high on the cashless side. I don't know about the United States. Do you still use cash regularly? In the UK, it's kind of a mix. It depends which shop you go to. And they don't accept £50 notes. It's so annoying when I go back to the UK at Christmas or in the summer holiday and... You go to the bank in Korea and they give you £50 notes because it's the highest denomination that they can give you. And then you go to the UK, no one accepts them.
That's a little strange that they wouldn't cash out a 50 pound note. In the US, I would say most of the time I use my card, but I still use cash. If I go to a restaurant or something small, a lot of times I'll just have cash on hand. Personally, me, I always have, $100 to $300 on hand just in case if anything happened, the payments providers go down, or it's just nice to have a little bit of cash on hand. But yeah, for the most part, I use my card most of the time, just like people all over the world. But still cash is used a little bit here. It's not completely cashless.
I think it'll take a while as well. I think there are some people that are suspicious of a cashless society as well. So there's more of the freedom vibe in the United States. So
yeah, if you can see every single payment you've made, you can almost track your location, where you've been, what you've done, where you go to eat, what you buy. If anything, maybe you just want to buy beer with cash for whatever reason. You don't want to see every time you buy a 24 pack or something. Not to say that I'm an alcoholic, but just any sort of basic privacy stuff. You know what I mean? It's kind of if you pay with cash, it's I think I heard this somewhere else, doing KYC. It's if you go to a restaurant, they don't KYC you if you're to check if you're a terrorist before you order a pizza. You know what I mean? It's you're allowed to just pay without doing KYC. So it's a little crazy, but that's neither here nor there. I could go on a crazy tangent about cash and credit cards and crypto, but I think that's a pretty good place to wrap it up today.
Yeah, that sounds good to me, Cade. I enjoyed this month's cryptocurrency. It's November here. It's October, end of October there. So this will probably be out the first week of November of 2019. Thanks for tuning in to The Dark Side of the Hodl Moon. And Cade, I'll let you wrap it up with your send-off.
All right. Yeah, until next time, we'll see you on the dark side of the scary, spooky... Hodl Moon.
Thank you for joining us on Dark Side of the Hodl Moon. If you haven't already subscribed, please do so. Also, be sure to join our Telegram group, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and follow us on BitChute and YouTube, where you can find all the episodes as well as highlights from previous episodes. You can also visit us at darksideofthehodlmoon.com.
Hodl Moon!